Welcome back to another episode of the Stephen Reed podcast. On today we have Lawrence featuring, talking all about his uni life and some of our weird and wacky dreams.
Stephen,
the elusive one and only Lawrence Harvey,
the very mysterious Lawrence Harvey, who happens to have a very big cold at the moment. So I'm going to apologize in advance for any sniffs, grumbles, moans.
So do I. I have a bit of a sniffle, so it's fine.
We can
write this one off as the cold episode, and everyone can listen with diseased, like under blankets and stuff like that.
Get the toxic symbol that they put on those big barrels of waste, like, yeah, right at the end of it.
We'll just put it on the picture for this episode, so people know to prepare themselves.
Spoiler alert: it's gonna be sick.
So I'll give the audience a little bit of background, who you are and what you do. So you fill in any gaps that I miss or get wrong. So Lawrence Harvey grew up with us all in Thatcham, and we all went to school together, and we were in choir together when we were in year seven. We went on a trip to Barcelona years ago, and then sort of just going closer and closer over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And went off to study chiropractics at university.
I did.
Now in your final year and currently on placement.
Yep, nice and stressed.
How's that all going for you?
It's really good, actually. It's completely different to what I was expecting, because the previous 4 years have been purely academic, and then you get, say, your exams at Christmas and at Easter and then also at summer. But every day has been almost like an exam, like seeing people, trying to figure out what to do, you know, being safe and competent, which we are. It's a lot of stress, but it's good stress. Like, you suffer, but you're happy about it, because you're there doing what you want to do. You're helping people. And at the end of the day, that's what you're there to do, is to help people get on with their lives, or that's to get out of pain, or to want to be able to perform better, like physically, like doing exercise. So it's a mammoth task, really, because anything can walk through your door. And it being a university clinic, you get a lot of the weird and wonderful that other people don't see. So our floor tutors would be like, you wouldn't see this in normal practice, because this place just attracts, I was going to say nutters, but not nutters, but these so interesting, like, cases are just amazing, which just adds to the stress, which is lovely.
It must also, at the same time, offer really good learning opportunities.
Yeah,
surely,
because you're just there. It's all, you're constantly at 100%. You've got to be on your game all the time. You can't let it slip, and it's such a eye-opening kind of experience for what the world of adulting is like.
That's good. I remember when I was at uni, the two of my housemates were studying dental hygiene therapy. One of them had specifically chosen this university, or one of the main reasons for choosing it was the fact that it's in the northeast of England, which is one of the worst rates for, like, dental hygiene in the UK. So he's going to get the most valuable experience out of it.
But really? Is that
I think that was his mindset.
He wants to go learn about teeth where there are no teeth.
Where there's, like, some teeth, not good quality teeth.
Oh, this person, they've only got three teeth. Oh, cracking.
Well, you can find out all the things that are wrong with teeth.
That's very true. You got to know what's bad to know what's good.
So you were saying earlier that you spent about 4 years leading up to your placement year.
Yeah.
Doing sort of the theory and the studying behind it.
Mm-hmm.
How is it feeling now to eventually do the actual nitty gritty?
It's really weird, because you kind of, you psych yourself up for 4 years, like when you're in your first year, then your second, you're like, oh, it goes, three more years, here we go, can't wait. And then all of a sudden, blink of an eye, you're there. And it's like, oh, I've got to put everything I know into practice, which is really difficult. That sounds really stupid because you have all this knowledge, but then you've got to have the confidence. I think that's the confidence that is the key to be able to implement your knowledge into practice. And it's the most bizarre thing I've ever done. Like that jump. It was literally like, right, here's the deep end of the pool. In you get. Oh, there's no floats. There's none of those little floaty noodles things. All those.
So how does it compare to the transition between GCSEs and A-levels? Because for a lot of people, myself included, that was probably the biggest jump I've ever done, I'd imagine.
It's a lot smaller, actually. I found the jump between A-levels and university really small compared to GCSEs and A-levels, because I struggled at A-levels. I hated A-levels. I just bummed them off. I was like, nah, not doing that. I kind of like found my feet at GCSEs. I was enjoying the high life of, you know, a couple A's. You know, how you feel on top of the world at GCSEs when you get like some good marks, and then you realize like, nah, doesn't mean anything, because A-levels just come around the corner and like beat you with a stick.
Yeah.
In terms of like stress and work.
And all of a sudden your GCSEs that you work so hard for don't even matter.
No, they do not matter. And trying to tell anyone that when they're in that situation, they just go mad at you. But I would have gone mad at someone if they told me that.
I would definitely remember people telling me that GCSEs were a piece of piss.
Yeah.
And I was thinking at the time, you don't know what you're talking about. This is really hard. This is the hardest thing I've ever done, ever. You're
16 years old, like going, I'm so stressed, being very macabre, and like you want to kind of crawl in a dark room with like an oil lamp, like, oh, woe is me. And then you realize when you're older, you go, oh, I had it so easy. You know, just come home, have a bowl of cereal, think about doing some revision. That was enough revision. Thinking about the revision was enough to pass, really.
Hmm. Going to lessons and thinking and listening is sometimes
actually
pretty...
sitting in those lessons was the most difficult part, especially with some kids, you know.
So you just mentioned about sitting on a sofa and eating cereal and revising.
Yeah.
How has your food habits changed since you've been to university? Do you have any really wonderful meals that you go to?
I'm poor. I don't have all the fine things in life. I don't have Waitrose Finest anymore. No, that was a cheeky like insert. Hit me up, Waitrose.
We're not sponsored by Waitrose.
No.
Yet.
Oh no, it's Tesco's Finest anyway. I messed it up. Never mind. Waitrose
Shameful.
Essential. I'm currently winking right now.
Wink.
It's all my food habits. They were really bad when I first began, because when you're in halls, or as old people, I describe them as digs. When you're in halls, like your sole purpose there is to socialize and have a good time, and you know everything comes in the form of liquid. So bread, that's beer. Fruit is then wine. Potatoes is then vodka. And you get like the essential Coca-Cola lemonade, an occasional Iron Brew if you're feeling exotic. I was eating such rubbish. Well, I think I was, but I'm looking back on it now, I still ate pretty good. Like, I stopped eating meat when I was in halls. I do eat meat now, but not as much as I used to before university, because it's just so expensive. And people used to go, oh, you're cooking something rather fancy. I'm like, it's just a chili. It's not particularly that amazing. But to some people, that's like the most amazing thing in the world, because you can just conjure it up out of your cupboard. I had like one flatmate called me Ramsay once.
That's a
simply
hell of a
because
compliment.
He caught me cutting up a carrot.
Or were you swearing at your food while you were
That was probably a mixture of me swearing and like actually being able to use like utensils, because all he did was eat breaded chicken and rustler burgers.
Right.
So I must have been astonishing to him. Like, absolutely mind-blowing. Like, oh my God, what is that orange thing? It's a carrot. I won't mention, I was going to say his name, but I won't do that. It just, like, bites me in the arse. Green vegetables, love them. But no, and as I've gone through university and the type of course that we do, you kind of get a bit more health conscious. And I was always, like, of the mindset, I was like, I'm never going to be one of these people who thinks about what they like. I'm going to eat for pleasure, like going to do what I like. But now I'm like, oh no, that's, look at those micros and macros and carbohydrates. And oh, have I had my 5 a day now?
That's really interesting.
I've become such a boring person.
You seem to have gone a very different route to quite a lot of people who go to uni. Like you were saying, a lot of people move away from their parents who cook good food for them, and then they're left to fend for themselves, and they end up just settling with Domino's, pizza, or the, you know.
See, I would do that, but like Domino's just wrecks me and my wallet.
And your wallet, especially your wallet.
Yes, I can't even do that because it's just not worth the pain.
Well, I was half expecting you to say something like cold bean sandwich or something, cold baked beans.
No.
You know, because some people go to university and have these.
You can't afford fire. why are you having cold beans? Are you having cold beans, Stephen?
I personally wasn't, but I've heard of people who have.
Well, I have a friend who has cold beans.
I tell you what, actually, I heard the other day about a long distance friend who went to university, and what he ate most of the time was essentially baked beans on toast, but
raw.
Yeah, raw.
Yeah, so raw baked beans.
It would be bread with cold baked beans on top.
That's the culinary equivalent of like, oh, my friend has a rash. Like, oh, are you the friend? Oh, that's actually made my skin crawl.
It's pretty brutal. I personally put everything in a wrap at uni.
Oh, you big wrap man.
Yeah, because it saved on washing up. Two, made life so much easier to eat. But three, wraps, in my opinion, just make everything an awful lot better.
See, I am a big, like your friends, I do enjoy beans and bread, but I do heat mine up. And yeah, beans on toast just hits my soul just perfectly. I actually hate to think about how much money I've given Heinz.
You buy the expensive beans.
Oh, I'm only going for the finest stuff.
Wow.
I need the sauce. It's nice.
Splash out on Heinz. Because
I know I'm going to have it, so I might as well enjoy it.
What bread are you getting then if you're treating yourself to Heinz?
I get the whole meal because, you know, I'm not. Oh. I don't get like the bleach soaked white bread. Yeah. I care about my body. So I do get the cheap whole meal though because, you know, I'm not. Don't have solid.
Care about your
pockets.
Wallet too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For what I lack in bread, I make up in bean quality.
Good.
And, you know, I add a little bit of sauce here and there. I'm going to say ketchup, but it's probably Heinz as well. Lunchtime's brought to you by Heinz Company.
And we're not currently sponsored by Heinz.
Sorry, I've mentioned it so many times.
If you would like to sponsor our podcast, I would be more than grateful.
I would love it. Beans for life, please.
Yeah, could you imagine? It's actually one of my go-to meals, like baked beans on toast, because it's so easy. It's fairly nutritious in easy meal senses, I think.
Yeah.
Well, at least I justify it to myself like that.
It's good wintertime
food. Yeah, and sure.
I'm craving it a lot. And I'm also a big soup man. I love me a soup. Mm. Like, even if you just make it your own, it takes a while, but like a spicy parsnip, oh my goodness. Spicy parsnip soup.
You sound like you really enjoy
it. I love
spicy parsnip soup.
It's one of the best soups, controversial. Some people are like, oh, I like tomato. I'm like, that's like only liking vanilla ice cream.
Mm.
Like, you're a mad, like, you are someone. Actually, this is true. We went to the cinema and they kind of like, they have these like little offshoot ice cream places in cinemas now. And she was like, oh, I really fancy a milkshake with ice cream. I was like, oh, treat yourself. And she goes up to the person. The person's like, oh, what ice cream flavor would you like in your milkshake? And this is fancy. So they got like mint choc chip, chocolate, strawberry, but they've got all the fancy ones like cookies and cream, caramel explosion, you know, bubble gum nonsense, like all the big fancy flavors. And she kind of like, she pondered, she looked at all these flavors for a while and she went, can I just have vanilla? I'm like,
what's wrong with her?
Like, you had like, I had like the anime eyes of like the blink blink, like, what is going on here? She's gonna pay a lot because it's a cinema, and she's just going, I'm gonna have the vanilla milkshake. I'm like, no, you're
missing
out.
She's a vanilla person. She must
be.
She's boring in other senses too.
She's quite fun. So maybe it's just her milkshakes that are like, she's like, oh, I'm going to choose to be boring in life when it comes to milkshakes. Dairy products.
One of the things
mind-blowing.
I remember specifically about you and food is that you used to claim for a very long time that pineapple on hot food was wrong. And maybe we might have to edit this out if you're really worried about getting
listeners
this out there.
Here we go. Just looking at it, it's just wrong, right? Because pineapple is nice, it's exotic, it should be viewed on its own. It's very sweet, kind of tart. I like it a bit sharp, actually. And then people are like, oh, I'm going to put it in this like chow mein or worst of all, it's pizza, right? And you kind of look at it from outside and you're like, oh, you put that on a pizza. Where would the peaches? Why didn't you add peaches on a pizza?
Strawberries.
Screw it.
Fuck it.
Everything. Kiwi, banana on a pizza. Like, well, that all sounds minging, right? Doesn't it?
It
so
does.
So, what's
yeah.
the difference between pineapple? And I had that opinion for years. And it was quite an aggressive opinion because it would always be brought up like when you've had a couple drinks and we're all fancying some food and it's like, oh, should we get some pineapple on pizza? And I'll just be immediately triggered. But we were at a party for New Year's Eve many moons ago, like over 12, and they were just like passing around pizzas and I wasn't really paying attention. Because I maybe had like 3 glasses of something probably very weak. I had the pizza and, oh, it was delicious. It was the best pizza I've ever eaten. And I looked back and there was a massive chunk of pineapple on these pizzas. And from then on, my eyes did like this big old kind of like wide zoom. I was like, oh, it's actually really naughty. And then from then on, even like I'm just pineapple on pizzas every time.
Oh wow!
So you've yeah, literally I'm a flipped big convert. The script.
You're like one of those people who like is a devout atheist, then all of a sudden you convert like, and you're knocking on people's doors, telling them they should believe.
I'm like the Jean Valjean of like pineapple on pizza. You have turned my life around. I'm now the mayor of Pineapple on Pizza Town.
Dude, I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I think that's a really good thing you've done for yourself. I mean,
of all the good things I could do in this world, like converting to pineapple on pizza has been my greatest achievement.
I think so. Yeah. Have you changed in any other ways since you've been at uni?
That's very difficult because everyone changes at uni. Like, even though people are like, oh, I'm not going to change, man, and they come back and they're the same person, but they're very different. The biggest one is I'm not as chubby anymore. I think I'm one of the few people that went to uni and then wasted away. I come back and my mum's like, oh, you look really skinny, Lawrence. Let me give you some food. Let me give you some wine. Which got really deep, like, creepy voice. It's like a
your
food
mom.
Gremlin. Yeah, my mum. And but no, I think that's the biggest thing. You're going to probably say something different in a minute if you've noticed anything different about me. But I think everyone does slightly change.
I think one of the most noticeable things about you going to uni is every time you come back, you seem to have a different haircut or a different...
Oh, yeah.
There's something different about you, which is great. I really love seeing the many haircuts and phases of
Lawrence
Harvey.
I go through, like, miniature crises, and obviously, like Britney Spears, when that happens, the hair just needs to go. So in my first year of uni, we were kind of like sat around in the kitchen and we were just like talking about things. Oh, wouldn't it be really funny if, like, you know, I threw the shoe out the window, I had to go get it. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's really funny, man. And then I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if I just shaved my head? And then everyone kind of like went silent and went, yeah, yeah, it would. The next thing I know, I've got beard trimmers in my hair, like pulling out hair, kind of like cutting me. I was like, oh, hang on, this is not good because it's not getting anywhere and I look like I've been like dragged through a hedge backwards. Luckily someone had like clippers in the halls and then it just went away. So I was bald for most
like fully bald. I was like no hair.
It went fully bald, and then obviously it grew. But I went fully bald and I was like bald for a long time. It was really funny at first, but then for viewers who can't see it because it's a podcast, I'm a ginger. And so I'm bald, right?
For
and
his
then,
sins.
Yeah. And when it's growing through, it's like you get these little tiny, like really ginger hairs. And it looks like the beginning of The Lion King. It's like a constant like, nah. And you're waiting for that Zvenya, but it takes months to get there. And it's just, I'm looking at pictures and it's just awful. Like, I've just I look back at uni, I go, oh, that was a really fun year, but I look like a sack of shit. I look like I've been turfed out my own house and like been, I'm gonna say, oh, it's just bad. And then I grew it really long after that, didn't I? I was like, okay, I've shaved it. I'm now going to go really long. And I had it about down to my shoulders. And I looked looked like
like a new age hippie.
It was really bad. I'll say Billy Ray Cyrus, kind of like, because my hair's really straight. It has no kind of like texture or body to it. It doesn't like curl. It just goes down straight. And so I look back and it was quite nice, actually. I do enjoy it. I do miss my long hair. I had that for a year. Then I cut it normal. I had a normal haircut for about 6 months. And then another crisis, obviously, occurred. So I bleached my hair. Bleached it. I murdered my scalp and my hair. Then I bleached it and then I dyed it silver for holiday. Because that's what you do when you're young and gay. You go, oh my God, I'm going to go on holiday. I'm going to have silver hair. I'm going to look amazing.
And you can.
And yeah, I can.
Because you're young,
and I
right?
dead and I'm young and oh my God. And I did that. And I look back and I'm like, oh, I kind of like it a little bit. And next time I wouldn't bleach it, I would highlight it properly. I'll spend a lot of money and get it highlighted so it had like blondy golden like streaks for it, because I did really enjoy it. And now I grew that. That took ages growing that out. Oh my goodness. And it looked really good when like the top was still bleached and the sides were like dark and gingery. And now it's normal hair. Yay.
Plus a moustache.
Plus the moustache, because... did Movember at university, me and some friends.
You actually did that with people you row with, is that right?
And they attempted, but it was shocking. So they gave up because it was like they had like one hair between them.
Oh God.
But I kept mine. And I've kept it since because I think it looks, I've had a couple of compliments and I'm like, oh, that kind of like, you know, put some fire up in my chimney. I'm not quite like that. I like getting compliments. And then other people hate it so much, it gives me severe pleasure to watch them like go, ugh. I'm like, haha, you hate it.
That gives you more pleasure, does it?
Oh, yeah, big time. Watching people like be it's almost they're uncomfortable with it. And it just fills me with a lot of pleasure knowing someone's like slightly suffering.
Do you know, I think it looks fabulous.
Thank you.
But I've just realised who it reminds me of. And oh, you're going to crucify me for this.
Oh, please.
Ned Flanders.
Oh, no. Oh, how did you diddly do that? I can't believe you. That's not the first time, though. I've heard it.
Is it really?
Yeah. One of the people behind front desk at the clinic. Because Ned Flanders refers to it as like a flavor saver.
Wow.
Yeah. And they said that to me. And like, I did gag a little bit. But then
that's
I went,
grim.
Hmm.
That's actually grim.
I do need to trim it because I can just feel it slightly over the top of my lip. Mm. And it's like, it's a little ticklish, which is kind of fun. But like, it does need to be trimmed. Ned Flanders, though, yeah.
I like it personally. I think it suits you.
Thank you.
I'm interested in the rowing stuff because
yes.
For a long time, I've known you as someone who's not rowed. And you've only in the last,
rowed.
Was it the last? Couple of months
last,
or the last
started in September.
Okay.
Because I, again, for people who don't have visual aids, I'm 6'3".
He's a tall bloke.
All legs. I have the world's tiniest body. if you actually like look at me and my proportions, they're all out of whack. I'm like one of those like spindly spiders that has really long legs and the tiny bodies. And and I wanted to do it last year. Year previously when I was at university, and I kind of just chickened out of it, and I never really forgave myself for a year. I was like, oh, come on, Lawrence, you know, like, I think you should do a sport at university, it'd be really good fun, like hitting the nail on the head, what, go for it. And I just didn't, because I was like, oh no, I don't want to do it, I'm self-conscious. And then I think I've grown since, not height, that stopped. Thank goodness, because I have a bad back. I was like, no, I'm just gonna go for it, because you know, I was going to say, YOLO, you only live once. I can't believe I just said that. And I was just like, yeah, let's go for it. And I love it. I love it so much.
What do you love about it? What? I've never
It feels really, it's going to sound really...
properly.
When you're on the water, it feels amazing. Because you're probably not even going very fast. Because we're all like, I mean, part of a novice crew. And if you're looking at us, we're probably just going around in circles, kind of like 1 mile an hour, I think. Up shit creek without a paddle. But when we're rowing, you feel like Anakin Skywalker on a speeder, like just gliding over this water. and it's amazing. And we row in South Wales out of Llandaff, and there's a part of the river there, and the time of year, especially autumn, it's just gorgeous. And when everyone's rowing in sync, you don't hear anything because you don't hear the oars hitting the water. You just hear like the whoomph, whoomph, and it's just gorgeous. And you can almost space out. And plus, I feel really fit as well. That's like the big perk of it. I just feel physically fit compared to where I was before, which I thought I still was physically fit. But now looking back on it, I was like a dumpling compared to like what I am now, which is a big perk as well. And you get to wear Lycra, which is amazing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's so smooth.
I have not yet had the opportunity to...
I brought it back with me to show my parents. So you can come round, mate.
Maybe.
Maybe. I love it. It's... Like, the kit is, I do wear the kit around, not like the Lycra bit, but...
At home in your...
in the middle.
When you're watching, when you're sat down on the sofa watching TV.
Yeah, my belly out, I'm like, yeah.
Lovely.
And no, I like wear like my hoodie and my splash jacket around. I do feel, it sounds really sad, but it does give you a little bit of an ego boost when you're like wearing like a sports kit around uni, because you're like, yeah, look at me. You don't do this. I do.
You're a bit of a sports shock now then.
Yeah. Or this whole conversation comes back to my ego, I think.
That's fine. It is a very narcissistic thing to do, to spend an hour talking about ourselves.
That's very true.
That's okay. I'll definitely absorb all your ego-ness. That's
I felt
fine.
A bit of pressure to start because I'm in a house where everyone did do a sport last year. And I was still very much like, I just go to the gym and swim occasionally. And... now I row and don't swim, because if I swim, I'm not rowing because I'm in the river. I do not want to be in that river.
Have you ever capsized then?
No.
Can you capsize on a rowing boat?
Oh, yeah, easy. It's, these things, they start you out in these boats called tubbies, and they're like impossible to tip and capsize, but they put you in these narrower boats. Every time you get a little bit better, they're like, right, smaller boat, until you get worse and get better, and smaller boat, and smaller boat. And you even think about wobbling. You wobble. It's the initial confidence of going, the boat's going to rock, just go with it. And when, once you kind of like master the fact of don't be rigid, just go with the flow, you don't fall in. Touch wood.
Touch wood.
Fall in next time.
I imagine most people at some point in their rowing career probably...
Oh, yeah.
Probably will fall in. You get chucked in, don't you, sometimes? Is that right?
You can get pushed in, yeah. I want to fall in, not in the winter times.
Hmm.
Like, come summer, late spring.
It strikes me as a tough sport to be doing in the middle of winter.
Yeah, it's...
Water's a cold place to be around anyway.
Water is cold. Like, we don't row if the conditions are abysmal. But if it's, like, raining a little bit, like, get on the water. Stop your moaning. You're not allowed gloves, though. No, they were referred to as bitch mittens.
Bitch mittens. I would definitely be wearing a pair of bitch mittens.
That's a big faux pas. You can't wear gloves. But at the same time, during the winter months, the river is the most pretty. You know, you catch all the leaves, and then all the leaves are gone, and all the trees are naked. And you get the frosty kind of like mornings as well. And we're near a weir, so you get the constant like... bit, which is quite fun, unless you go over.
Yeah,
don't do
which
that.
Would not be fun. Do you do most of your training indoors or outdoors?
We have, it's about 50-50 split, because we train on the water to row, and then you also got indoor. We do some indoor competitions on the erg, so that's the machines you find in the gym. You practice technique on those, and that is really difficult. Like, because most people row in the gym, the incorrect way is you should row when you're on the water. So kind of like adapting your body to that and kind of like getting that in-ground kind of like placed is quite a difficult task. And then also you're in the gym, like lifting weights, getting swole. So it's trying to find a split. It's taken up a lot of my life, but I'm quite happy with it, because I'd rather be doing that than... watching Netflix.
Definitely.
If, like, looking back on it, yeah, I'm so...
What's the biggest difference between using the way you use the rowing machine and being on the river then? Is there a difference in the feeling or...
Yeah, the feeling's completely different. Because it's the... When you're on the machine and the erg, you don't have to think about balance at all. It's the balance and the kind of like feel for the boat as you pull. But when you're erg, you just pull, right? It's like you push. Sorry, if there's any rowers listening. You push off with your legs.
Right.
That's essentially what you're doing.
Yeah.
But on the water, you're feeling the boat move as well. Like, you don't feel the machine move. So it's that added kind of like, it's this upper difficulty level is insane. But once you get the hang of it, after about an hour or so, you're like, okay, it's fine. Just crack on.
That's wicked.
So row your boat.
So you're about 3 or 4 months into your rowing career now.
Yeah.
Where do you see it going?
Oh, down the river. You're paddling away in my future. No, I definitely want to keep it going because where we live at home is there are quite a few waterways. Like I say, name drop Reading. There's loads of boat clubs.
They do there. Actually, yeah.
Then if I wanted to...
Got the River Thames flowing right through us.
There's a lot of opportunities to carry on, and I definitely think I will because I found myself a sport that I really enjoy doing, which is, I think the difficulty is finding one that suits you and your personality type. Yeah. And this definitely suits me.
That's so great.
I'm definitely going to keep going.
You seem to hint then that you're looking into the idea of moving back once you finish uni then. You're thinking about...
Yeah, I don't really have any plans yet because I'll finish in the summer, fingers crossed. And it's either move back here or go a little bit further into London. And there's loads of opportunity to do it there in London as well. I do really need to start thinking about it.
What would sway you towards one or the other?
I don't see the social life, I think, in London would be so much better. Not to like diss where we live, or you guys, because you guys are special. But
it's very kind.
Obviously, I went to uni. I'm not going to say where I went to uni because I don't want to like name drop. It's still quite a rural place. There's not a lot of nightlife, or too many social activities really going on. And I think I've missed out, especially being young. I think I could explore that a lot more in like a bigger city, just going out, making friends who are into different things. I've definitely missed out on that. That's the only thing I'll say bad about my uni experience is I missed out on a bigger social picture. So I'd like to do that. And I think the only way to do that is to work in London or then move to. And I'd quite like it anyway. I'd quite like to wake up in the mornings and not smell like fields of shit, like from all the farms. I mean, it's refreshing. You know, opens the lungs.
Certainly wakes you up in the morning, doesn't it?
But it'd be a bit different because you know, it'd probably be like human shit.
Yeah, shit.
I just said that about 8 times. That's the goal. 9.
9.
Yeah.
Awesome. So. It's not that far away, is it, really, in terms of looking into the future? You've probably got, another 6 months?
6 months to figure out my life. And it's the big things. It's where do you want to work? Where do you want to live? Where are you going to be happy? How are you going to pay for that? How are you going to pay for this? And that's just like my mum and dad saying that, let alone my inner monologue. Because at the moment, I couldn't care about it. I'm being blissfully ignorant and just not caring very much.
Well, you could look at it in two different ways, couldn't you? You could say that... You know, 6 months away, it's going to creep up on me and I need to sort it out. But actually, at the same time, you're very much focusing on your studies and what you're doing now. And actually, it's still 6 months away.
And due to circumstances, I think I would have had a lot more opportunities here. But due to circumstances a couple of years ago, those opportunities are now gone in terms of helping me find a job or someone who I could shadow and then be a mentor. That's now gone. That definitely adds an air of confusion to the situation. it muddies the waters, really.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
So, looking back then, maybe, instead of forwards, what will you miss the most about not being at uni?
The people. The friends that I've made are just incredible. We all mold together. Because I did foundation year, and there was 15 of us on the year, and we got really close together as friends, and we've been so tightly knit for these years going on. And then the people that have joined our year are just amazing as well. There's no kind of sub cliques. They're all really painfully nice, good people, which then puts me at like a higher ranking for probably being the nastiest person. Because some of these people have like hearts of like pure gold, and mine certainly isn't. And I'm just going to miss them so much. And it's just having that support of them there. I'm also going to miss Wales a lot, because Wales is really nice. It's really pretty. Near Cardiff, which is really nice. I'm definitely going to miss that a lot. But it's the friends and the kind of student living where everything's a bit shit, but you just accept it. You go, oh, that's broken. Of course it is. Like, I'm not going to get angry about it because, you know, I'm a student. I don't care. It's that, yeah. It's the whole lifestyle, really, I think I'll miss. Because I can't be a sponge on society anymore.
No, not forever. Yeah. No. I don't know that you are at the moment anyway, really.
No, I'm not awful. I could improve myself.
Wow. So could most of us, to be fair.
Yeah, very true.
I'll give you some reassurance that actually I don't think it was until maybe a month or two before I finished that I decided fully what I was going to do.
Okay.
I think it was really the pressure of it being so much closer that it made me realise I knew what I want to do all along.
Yeah.
It's like when you flip a coin. It's like for something, not often you actually know what you want it to land on first.
I think that's what it's going to come down to. I'm going to have to be selfish about it as well. I'm going to have to make a decision purely based on my happiness and what I want to do, not on the happiness of other people. Like, oh, that sounds awful, but it is true. Like, sometimes you've got to like look out for others, but at the end of the day, if it's something you're going to be doing for a couple of years of your life, you've got to be happy doing it and be like, I'm number one.
So if you couldn't pick London or this area, then maybe say even you couldn't pick the UK, where would you choose to work in the world?
I would go, my initial response is like somewhere exotic and very foreign.
Warm,
because it's cold here. but then I think about it logically, I don't speak any other languages particularly well.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet, but then I'm lazy and I'm going, that would take time to learn.
Mm.
So I'm going to look at the English-speaking world, and I'm immediately drawn to the Americas, so the United States and then Canada. Just because it's so similar, but at the same time, completely alien. And, you know, I've got a sexy British accent. And they'd be like, oh my God, that's amazing. Be like, hi there.
You definitely have that going for you.
I'm just thinking, my top trumps accent is like quite a high scorer, especially over there. But if I could practice anywhere, that's really difficult, Stephen. Maybe Northern Europe, like Scandinavia, like Norway, Denmark. Denmark's quite nice because they're quite similar countries to here. They're just a lot of differences.
What attracts you to say Denmark and not maybe France or Belgium or somewhere like that?
Because I've been to France a couple of times and it's a really nice place, but I don't feel I fit in culturally there. I've been to Belgium. I didn't particularly like it that much. It just wasn't the place for me, if I'm honest. It felt a bit sad there.
Sad.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a really strange.
I got there and you kind of like get off the bus and you go, everyone's a bit like somber. I don't know why. But because the chocolate's really nice. But everyone's a little
they should be really happy.
But everyone's a little bit sad about it.
That's because we're all eating their chocolate.
Yeah, that's very true.
We all waltzed in and stole their chocolate.
I said Northern Europe, but I want to go, I'm changing my mind. Can I change my answer?
You may, yeah, I'll give okay. you that.
I'm gonna lock in Italy.
Okay.
Beep, locked in. Final answer.
Until you change it.
Is it on the board? No, Italy. Because it is stunning. Yeah, the food is good. The people are just very pleasing to look at. it's got all the weathers. You can go a bit snowy in the north. You can go nice and hot in the south. There's so much culture there, which is really interesting. I'm a bit of a culture buff. You go on holidays. I do like to laze around and catch some rays, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, what's that? What's that museum? Look at that papyrus. It's got nothing particularly interesting on it, but that's cool because it's really old. And beaches. And just scenery.
Yeah, I'm all about the beaches.
Wine.
Yeah.
Lots of wine.
And the wine.
Yeah, I'm going to get all up in Italy's grill.
It's a good choice, I think.
Yeah.
I'd like to move away a little bit now from that type of conversation.
Go for it.
And I'd be really interested to find out what you would do, or what if you had to write a book about something.
Okay.
What would you choose as your topic?
This is really interesting because I've had quite a few dreams about this.
Seriously?
Yeah, I'm really into kind of thrillers, sci-fi, kind of secret service kind of things. And I would write a book about alien abductions in these towns and the government trying to hide it up, but then the locals kind of trying to find out about it and fight it, because I had a dream where I was a person in the town and people were getting abducted and coming back all different and no one was listening to me. It was very frustrating.
Wait, so you were you an alien or were you
no, I was a person in the town.
Person.
Yeah. And it was really tense. The whole thing was just tense. It was, I wouldn't say it was a nightmare. It was like a tense mare or a night tense. It was the suspension, the suspense was incredible. I'm getting really giddy thinking about it. That's what I would do.
So
Men
right
in Black
saying,
kind of esque.
Okay.
1980s, 1970s kind of era, when it's all kicking off about aliens, Roswell.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Am I right in saying then that you knew about the aliens, and like you say, the government were trying to cover it up, but you were
trying to get the truth out there.
Yeah,
kind of. It's very I've been watching a lot of X-Files recently.
Okay.
So
maybe
my brain's
that.
A bit. Yeah, got a bit of tunnel vision going on at the moment. But that's what I would kind of go, and I'd make it a horror.
Right. Okay.
Make it quite scary, because I think that situation would be quite terrifying. Wouldn't be a children's cartoon. Oh my god, it's the aliens! And then they kind of now we're best friends. Be no, this would be scary because people getting probed and abducted.
That strikes me as a really vivid dream.
Yeah,
have dreams as vivid as that?
No, that's the thing. I'm normally a person who doesn't dream at all. I go to bed, I lie down, arms crossed like a vampire, wake up, arms crossed, ready to go. Let's have some Weetabix.
You sleep with
Let's
your arms crossed?
Sometimes. I'm angry. I'm go to bed angry. But occasionally I'll have these really vivid dreams and I don't know what they mean or why I had them, and it's really freaky. The latest one I've had is I fell into an animal enclosure at a zoo and I just got ripped apart by chimpanzees.
God.
It was terrifying. I don't dream, and then every now and again something horrible happens.
Is it because you ate cheese or something?
No, maybe.
Is there a link before you?
I don't know. Right, I'm gonna have to experiment.
Have you ever looked into why you have what those dreams are supposed to signify?
No, because it's not the classic my teeth fell out and now I'm gonna get some money.
Yeah. I was
attacked by a pack of animals.
Because there are supposed to be certain meanings behind different types of dreams. And they're not always.
No, I think I think I get them more if I'm stressed.
Okay.
I think if I'm not stressed, I sleep easy. I don't dream at all. Or if I do dream, I don't remember it. But if I am stressed, I'll have and these kind of like weird and wonderful. So they're not weird and wonderful. They're terrifying and scary, like nightmares.
So I had a really vivid dream, probably a couple of months ago now, where, and it was completely out of the blue. It didn't make any sense while I was in the dream, and it made even less sense after I'd woken up from the dream and reflected on it. And this was, the whole premise of the dream was I was being chased.
Okay, yeah.
By two friends.
Oh.
Two friends I hadn't seen for a long time.
Okay.
And I was running away with a plastic garden chair in my hand. For absolutely no reason. There's no context to it.
Was there a climax to the story? Did they catch you?
I woke up before I was caught. Ooh. I know that for certain. So I remember, like you were saying about your story, where it was all really tense and
it's awful.
You know,
isn't it?
Sometimes you even wake up and you still feel that like tension in you.
Yeah,
your heartbeat's still going quite fast. And I remember waking up thinking, "Bloody hell! Like,
what was that?"
And like, you know, what does the chair mean? Yeah. Did I win? Did I like escape the friends? And why did they want my chair so badly? And
it must all symbolize something. There's probably some like lady in a tent going, "Well, it means this and that because of the stars and the skies." But if I'm honest, they're just weird.
I think so.
I can't put any meaning, give any meaning to it at all.
I've heard that dreaming and obviously sleep in particular, they can actually be really rejuvenating. And actually, I don't really know why we dream. I'm not sure
afterwards
why, but there's supposed to be some goodness to it and some benefit. And actually, it's your brain just going wild and
that
definitely. Apparently, even when you have your deepest sleep, your like REM sleep, you're still dreaming, but instead of actual movie type dreams where you've got plots and people and you can hear voices maybe in dialects, you're actually dreaming about colours or emotions.
Oh.
So it's in a much deeper level. It's all very strange.
There's a lot of science into it, and it's very interesting, but at the same time, there's so much. It's like, it's difficult to where to start. Like, even thinking about it is really trippy, because you're like, why did I think of that? Am I messed up? Am I not messed up? Do other people dream like this? Is it just me? Am I alone? Like, these are the big questions that I faced in the dream, let alone outside the dream.
You mentioned earlier about almost like tarots and gypsy reading, palm reading stuff. Have you ever had anything like that done for you?
No, it kind of freaks me out, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm quite interested in the pattern in case there is something like, ooh. Yeah. But I know if I got a bad like reading, it would freak me out. But then I think it's very much, if you believe it, it will come true kind of thing.
Okay. Like a self-fulfilling prophecy, whatever they tell you is going to happen, you almost end up seeking it in some strange way.
Yeah, and I think that gives you the drive to do it. But at the same time, there might be like a mystical like power grid that we're all connected to that pokes and prods us in the mysterious ways.
In the Matrix.
Yeah. We get unplugged. Like, give us an iOS update and, you know, there's your destiny.
It's interesting because I've heard quite a few people who've gone and had very, very truthful readings things that aren't, you know, there's no saying or knowing why those things happen. One friend I know was told that they were going to, you know, they were asked, do you have like a bad injury or a bad like knee or something?
Yeah.
And they were saying like, no, I don't actually. And they were thinking, well, I think you might at some point. And very soon after, they went and they nearly tore one of their ligaments in their knee, and that's really strange. And then I know someone else who's been told that one of their close friends is going to pass away, and actually very soon after, and for young people too, you know, and those things really do
see some
blow
things
your mind,
can be like
they?
Some things can be explained and others can't, and it's when the ones that can't be explained are a bit That's what like really goes, because like you said with the knee, you go, everyone has a bad knee from every now and again. I was going, oh, you're going to get a cold this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And then going, oh my God, I'm going to get a cold this year. This is amazing. And then, but then like you said, like the latter, how do they know that? Unless they've been peeping at records, which is illegal. So it's a bit crazy. And sometimes I feel uncomfortable. Sometimes I feel intrigued. You have to catch me in the right mood.
Yeah.
Mostly intrigued, if I'm honest.
Would you ever be up for finding out when you're going to die?
No. Well,
someone said,
I wouldn't like...
If Will turned around right now and said, I know when you're going to die. I know exactly how long you've got left to live. Would you like to know?
I would... No. Well, it depends on the situation. As I am now, no. But if I got an illness, I would like to have a kind of rough expiry date so that I can make the most of it.
Okay.
And then almost go the way I want to go, if that makes sense. Because if I know I'm going to deteriorate, I might want to go with some... personally some dignity and, you know, do it the way I want to do.
Okay.
But if I'm just gonna get like whacked by a bus during, you know, a shopping trip, well, it'd actually be quite annoying because I bought things, but like, if it's gonna be sudden, then let it be. But if I knew roughly an expiry date as I got closer to it, if I was ill when I'm older, then let me know. But as for now, Will can keep it to himself.
I don't really know what I would say to that, to be honest. I don't know what my answer would be. I do know, very much on a similar note to what you were saying, is I think it would probably make it easier to accept when the time comes. You could probably prepare yourself. And actually, we all know that we're going to die eventually, right? But it's something we put off and ignore because we think we've got a lot longer to go. And at our age, it's probably quite a logical thing to think.
Fingers
really.
Crossed it's far away.
Exactly.
But yeah, you don't know. Like, this is very morbid. Now I'm thinking about it.
Well, personally, I think we should have more conversations about death.
Yeah, no, you're right.
A lot of people will avoid it and don't like to talk about dying, no. And they think it's a terrible subject.
But it does happen.
It happens
to everyone.
Exactly. It's quite a common thing in life, it's isn't it? Really,
one of those inevitable things that do occur.
Yeah, it's actually something that one of the few things that connects us all as humans too.
Yeah,
you can't take that away. You know, you could be Bill Gates or you could be, you know, Joe Bloggs on the street corner who's got nothing, and actually you're all connected by the fact that we're all mortal, and it doesn't matter how much wealth you have accumulated through your life, you're all going to end up
you have to make the most of what you've got. And you know, and if you do know, if you don't go suddenly, you have to go towards the end with having no regrets. Really, that's how I want to live. No regrets spelled incorrectly.
That's good.
Yeah.
Do you have any like long-term goals or any short-term ones maybe? We're right around sort of New Year's resolutions making time at the moment.
Yeah. Long-term, I've always said that I want to have a lawnmower that I can sit on. Right? Because that there's many things that there are many things that have led up to this purchase of the lawnmower that you can sit on. Number one, you have the lawnmower, so you have enough money to buy the lawnmower. Number two, your garden's big enough to warrant said lawnmower. Big gardens tend to come with big houses. Big houses need big money, and big money means big fun. So by having
the logic
sit on
there.
Lawnmower, I've got a big house. I've got like the trophy husband. I'm going on these big old holidays and wearing the nice suits, you know, but I still have enough leisure time, self-care time to do the own gardening. So
yes, that's a really interesting point. I'd not even thought about that.
So really, by just having this lawnmower, my whole life is just taken care of.
Yeah.
It's not like one of these things like, oh, I want to like touch a shark. You know, like, what are you doing?
Why would you want to touch a shark anyway? Like, bite your hand off.
Like, some people are like, oh, yeah, the shark. Or like, you know, I want to go skydiving. Like, cool. You could just do that, but like, I want something that goes bosh. Like, I've got lots of this shit.
I think it's a really, it's a really good point, though, about actually having that wealth, but also having the time to enjoy it, because, you know, you could easily just get a gardener, right?
Oh, quite easily.
If you had that much money and wealth, but actually you're still...
I have enough leisure time.
I appreciate that. I think that's a really honourable decision you've made there. Thank you.
What would you go for?
My life goal, honestly, is to have a nap every day. And
That's what you do every day. That's sleeping.
Not sleeping. Well, yes, napping is sleeping, but fairly similarly to you is what it means.
Okay.
To be in the position to have a nap every day means that either I have the financial freedom to do that, maybe I have the flexibility in my life and my work that I can do that. I know that I enjoy napping, and I wouldn't nap for like 4 hours at a time, because that's not a nap, that's a sleep.
Yeah.
I would nap for maybe half an hour, just a quick refresher over lunch. Yeah. You know, you usually get to that 2 p.m. slump or something and you need to crash out. So I'd probably do something along that line, I think.
See, I'm in the no nap camp.
What?
Yeah.
Get out. Get out of that camp.
It's like,
come over here and enjoy the fun camp.
I've got things to do. I can't nap. I feel rough after a nap. Even if it's 15 minutes, I feel rough. Like, I should have gone to sleep, but I didn't. And you're always in your daytime clothes, and sleeping in your daytime clothes is, you just feel minging afterwards, personally.
Okay.
It's like you've gone camping, but it's in your bed. Like, and that's just like, to me, it doesn't sit well with me.
See, I love camping, and
at the same time,
I particularly enjoy camping in my own bed.
At the same time, there's many times which I'm like, I could do with a nap right now. So yeah. I'm a nap for necessity and not for pleasure.
Okay.
No nap camp.
No nap camp. Well, let's just agree to disagree.
Oh,
then.
Big. I like that's. Your goal, mate.
Yeah, oh sure, yeah,
you should,
exactly.
Like,
my goal is to have a sit on lawnmower for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd do with a sit on lawnmower. First of all, I don't even have a lawn.
Yeah, no.
And if I carry on the boat route, then I'll probably...
Yours would be like a speed boat, like a jet ski.
Yeah, or a yacht. I'd quite like a yacht, to be fair.
Yacht would be cool.
A yacht with maybe a tennis court or a squash court and... The sauna on
I would
it.
Love enough money nice. To have a yacht and then have a cannon and then sink another yacht with
be
my
a pirate.
Yacht. Yeah.
Be a luxury pirate.
Like, literally throw away money into the sea by destroying a second yacht.
Oh, so it'd be your yacht?
So I have two yachts.
Okay.
But I have so much money, I'm gone, screw it. I'm going to fire a cannon. I'm going to sink the other yacht.
Well...
With my enemies,
you might not have to buy the second yacht, right? And I'm not for I'm not
yacht.
No, I'm not for a minute suggesting you sink some other posh billionaire's boat.
He's winking right now.
I'm not.
Air quotes.
I might be.
Yeah,
I did that. But we were having a discussion actually, myself and I think it was Ben and Will maybe or it was Guy actually one of the recent guests on the podcast featuring in the conspiracy theories episode. We were talking about the future of phones and technology, and actually his dad works for a phone company, apparently we're on the horizon in the very near future. We can expect holograms.
Oh really?
Like fully blown holograms, and apparently very recently there have been phones that have been patented. I think it was Samsung that patented phones that, like Star Wars and Princess Leia, they have the ability to have a hologram on the phone.
God, that'd be...
So what I'm saying is you could have a hologram yacht. And by the time you've got enough money to have two yachts, the technology will be fantastic.
But I don't get to sync the hologram.
But it would be so lifelike.
VR, man.
You wouldn't even have to have the other yacht.
That's very true. Oh, but that little kid inside of me is like, destroy the yacht.
It's like smashing plates. You still want to... Yeah. It's the actual act of knowing you've destroyed something.
It's like when you like having to destroy furniture if you're like moving house. Mm. Oh my goodness, that was so much fun.
It can be really cathartic throwing stuff in the tip.
See how far you can throw it.
Yeah.
And like if you get to like, you throw it on the big pile of rubbish and it kind of like gives that like little kind of like rubbish fart and you get all that smell. You go, whoa. You go, oh, that was a good throw because I made the dump stink. Oh, I love...
I clearly have been doing it wrong my whole life because I've never experienced
and
that.
And all the other blokes are there and you're seeing how far you can throw your crap.
Maybe we should go on a trip to the tip together,
mate. The tip is really fun. Like, you see all the professional tippers and like the newbies. Because all the professional ones, they come in their big old cars. They're like big estate cars. They put down all the seats. They're wearing kind of like rough polos, some working trousers, some big old walking boots, and some. They brought gloves with them.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they know they're picking up rubbish. There's potential hazards. Safety first. And you get these newbies that just come along in their nice little shiny cars. They've only brought a couple things. Everything's like in bags. They're kind of like picking things up with like their thumb and index finger because they don't want to touch all the rubbish because they haven't brought gloves. And they're patting them into these bins where these experienced people are like, whoa, it's really fun.
And you get the rubbish fast.
Yeah, and you get the rubbish. It stinks, but it's like a good stink. It's just like, oh, yeah.
So
it's
I
like
take a manly it you're, stink. You're a professional tipper then.
I wouldn't say I'm professional. I'm
currently semi-pro.
Semi-pro. I know what I'm doing, but I haven't had enough experience.
Okay. Brilliant.
that's a lot of my life summed up right then.
Well, speaking of experience, you're probably now halfway through your last year, and I'm really looking forward to seeing you, qualify and graduate. It's been a long time coming, and it'd be really good to see a bit more of you as well, hopefully. And I imagine wherever you are, if you're in London, it'd be still be easy enough to see you.
Yeah, exactly. I hop on a train.
Unless you're in like Canada, then maybe not. But
oh yeah,
it's been really good to have you back. And actually, we grabbed you on the second day you're home. You only came back last night, right?
Whisked me off my feet. Yeah,
exactly.
Tore me from my mum.
Exactly. And we gave you an offer you could not refuse.
Yeah.
And here you are.
I love it.
I've really, really enjoyed having you on the podcast.
I've actually really enjoyed it. I was really chilled coming on, and then about 10 minutes before, I got a bit of a butterfly. I was like, oh, well, if I don't know what to say, if I trip on my words, which I did, but it's fine because I saved myself miraculously. And I've actually really enjoyed it.
It's been so entertaining for me to talk about all these wonderful things. Honestly, I've loved it. And I'm sure that the listeners out there will enjoy it too.
Fingers crossed. They better.
Well, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for Will for recording, as always.
Thank you.
And if you enjoy this episode, then go ahead and follow the podcast, maybe on Spotify or iTunes. Now we're on all the podcasting apps and sites out there. So, be sure to listen to a few more of the others if you enjoyed it. And we will see you on the next episode. Take care. Yeah.